aunties, how are you? And welcome to another episode of the Auntie Hour. This is our time. Okay, yeah. So you put those people out. If they're not ready to listen to what we got going on in here, this is our time. This is woman's time. This is our business. Okay. So I just am so excited to tell you who we got here today. You see her over there. Okay.
Excited to see you.
I'm so happy to see you too. This is Andrea Moorhead. She is a producer. She is an Emmy award-winning journalist. She served the people of Indianapolis. Minneapolis. I'm thinking about Prince, girl. I'm a Prince fan. Indianapolis. Indianapolis as an anchor for 25 years before she decided she had to go.
Girl, I dropped my mic. I'm out of here.
She had to go. Okay. She filed a discrimination lawsuit that she decided to rescind so she can speak freely in support of other people that were dealing with the things that she was dealing with in the workplace. And she's also starting a movement to introduce legislation that is going to help put an end to workplace bullying. Welcome to the Auntie Hour, Andrea.
I am so happy to be here with you. Happy. Girl, it's been over a year, almost a year, right?
Almost a year since I've known you. Yes. Yes. So this is the perfect place for us to be to talk about what you are doing right now. And I am in full support of you and going to push and amplify you in any way that I can. Tell us about your decision to leave your wonderful, I mean, people love you. I've been looking at your social media, there are people still looking for you on that news station.
It's been like, oh my God, I left in 2020. So here we are. It's almost 4 years. And people are like, when are you coming back?
Yes.
The news isn't the same. We miss you.
Right. Mm-hmm. So they love you and you love the job.
I did. So,
I mean, when I should say, did you recognize, hey, I've got to pull myself out of this mess. This is a mess.
Well, you know, Joanna, oh gosh, as Black women, we have learned to just pivot. You know, we know how to navigate the room. We know how to pivot and move in different directions so that we can still be successful in our own right. Because we already know that there are a lot of landmines that are strategically set up for us not to succeed. But I came from, two parents who are college educators, who are professors. My mother is a therapist. My dad was a college professor at Anderson University for so many years. He recently retired. And they always taught me, as most Black people do, that you've got to be 10 times better. So knowing that, always being prepared to be the best, that's in my DNA. That's who I am. I always was on point. I tell people all the time that, you know, my better is always better than your best. When you think you're best, I'm better because I work hard and that's my work ethic. And I know as a Black woman, as a Black person, that we have to be 10 times, 15, 20 times better. So for someone to say that my work ethic is less than stellar, that's a bold-faced lie. And I'm gonna call you out on it because I come to work prepared. I make sure that I give my audience, when I was on, you know, doing television news back then, that I bring my best. I always was working to make sure that what I did yesterday or the next day was better than what I did the day before. So that's who I am. I mean, my parents taught me that proper preparation prevents poor performance. And so some people would say that I was a perfectionist, but I wanted to be good at my job. And I loved it, loved it, loved it, loved it. But there came a point in time where as you get older, think about this. I was 29 years old when I walked in those doors. And as a grown woman, as you begin to matriculate through life and you have life experiences, there's something that happens where you kind of go, I see what that is. Mm-hmm. Huh. Okay. All those things that, you know, the John Lewis's of the day were talking about, I get that. Okay. But again, we know how to navigate and pivot. Because at the end of the day, I'm not going to let you necessarily push me out of a job that I love. However, there came a point in time where I didn't have a choice. The microaggressions, the racial discrimination, the workplace bullying, the macroaggressions, the implicit bias, all of these isms and the racism and sexism that continued and persisted. Think about 29 to 51 years old. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of growth that happens. And so I began to really understand what was going on.
Yes.
And you also get to the point where once you turn 50, there's something, it's like a light bulb goes, what you, right, it's like, what you gonna do on this?
Yes,
and
absolutely.
And so you don't speak it. But what happens is you're internalizing all of that negativity and the emotions of it all. And over time, it just got to be too much for me. A lot of it was because I was diagnosed with breast cancer, triple negative, which is the most aggressive form for Black women. And the recurrence rate is extremely high. And I realized as I was going through chemo and going through the radiation after the surgery, even when I was on my knees, hands and knees, crying, going, Lord, please save me, because the pain was too much. When the neuropathy got to be so bad, that was almost better than being at work.
Oh, boy. So the people at work were obviously not supportive as you were going through this. I know you very publicly shared your diagnosis.
Yeah.
So I know that was a challenge within itself.
Right.
To share what was going on privately to your fan base, mm-hmm. the people that watched you, your employer did not support your journey of healing, is what it sounds.
Yes. You know, what they say is, we were supportive, you know, oh, we're a family. That's what you say for the public. But I was literally breaking. My soul was gone. I saw my body at the bottom of a mountain, and I was ready to step off the mountain. Like, I literally saw my body. I was dying. I was physically and emotionally dying. And it just got to the point where I wanted to figure out, like, is this in my head? Am I just thinking, is this something I'm doing? Maybe I need to bring extra donuts in, or maybe I need to bring cookies in. You know, I'm thinking of all of these things. What can I do to feel as if I'm being treated better, or not even better, just with kindness?
Right.
And so it was just such an unprofessional environment where things that I needed to support me and my job, I wasn't getting access to photographers. I didn't have any production help. Stories that I had produced were taken away from me with no explanation. And it just got to the point where I was done with the lies, you know, telling me, oh, you owe us, you can't take vacation time off because you owe us 2 days from when you were getting chemo. I mean, the silliness. And I finally just said, this has got to stop. So one day I told my husband, I go, I don't know what's going on. I said, but this just doesn't feel right. No matter what I do, it just feels as if, you know, they're keep ratcheting up the crazy. And so I finally saw a therapist for the first time. And, you know, in the Black community, a lot of times, mm-hmm. it's like, oh, you know, keep your business, just pray to God.
Right, and
I just realized, I'm like, well, Jesus, I know you hear me. I'm praying every day, but the stuff keeps happening. So yeah. I told my mom and dad, told my husband, I said, I got to find someone. And so I found a wonderful, wonderful therapist. And the very first time that I went in, I sat there and I was explaining some of the situations and experiences. And she literally said, can you hold on a moment? She grabbed the Kleenex and she started crying with me. And she said, you should be dead right now. And it was the first time outside of my mom and dad and my parents and my sister and a couple of close friends who had been privy to what had been happening. The very first time that someone who didn't know me, who had a totally objective opinion and view of what I shared, the truth, not just an experience, but the truth of what happened. It was the first time that I felt affirmed, and the first time that I knew that what I knew intuitively, instinctively, in my soul, in my heart, was real.
And that validation used to be dead.
That validation literally changed my life. So over the next year or so, it's about a year and a half later, before I finally walked away. And I walked away on June 5th of 2020, and it was the story, my very last story that I filed, was a story of African-American women and really a diverse group of women and their feelings about George Floyd as a mother. I had posted a picture on Instagram holding my son, who at the time was 13 years old. And we were on the back porch and we were in our robes. He was reading and I was holding him. And my husband just happened to be walking by and took a picture of us, unbeknownst to me. And I went, oh, wow. He goes, you know, you all just look so peaceful out there. And I said, well, I was just holding him because the whole George Floyd, you know, we all know it was just so devastating.
Heartbreaking.
This could be my son.
Exactly.
This could be my son. Ahmaud Arbery, this could be my son. And in that moment, the next day, the news director said, oh, we want you to do a story. And I'm like, okay. Now, I've been going through all this drama and trauma at the office, and I kept thinking, you know, you're having me do a story, which is fine. But in the heart of my heart, I knew that you didn't really care. You just wanted me to fulfill, you know, my job requirement and have a story for the news that mm-hmm. afternoon. But as I was putting the story together, I realized that symbolically, the reason why it hurt so much for many of us as people of color, because we saw ourselves in George Floyd.
Yes, absolutely.
We saw ourselves where we are denigrated, maligned, underestimated, overworked, inequities across the board in the workplace and even socially. And in that moment, after filing the report, my producer called and said, okay, it was a Friday. She says, it was after the 6 o'clock PM show. And she said, give me an email over the weekend. Let me know what you're going to work on next week. And I said, okay, sure. And there was something in my spirit. It was literally God who just said, now's the time for you to walk away. And while I told her, okay, as soon as I walked off the set or, you know, got through, because we were broadcasting remotely, I called my husband. I said, I'm never going back. He goes, what? I go, this is it.
Your husband was like, what's going on?
I was like, I know we were talking about this, but like right now. And I said, yeah. I said, I can't do this anymore. I said, if I go back, that's literally, for me, it was being hypocritical. It was, here I am doing a story about this man whose life was literally taken away from him, who was not given the dignity of his humanity. And I feel the same way. And I'm dying. My soul is dying. And I walked away and that was it. June 5th, 2020 at 6:37 PM. I'll never forget it. That was the day that I said I got my freedom back.
You know, the thing that struck me the most about George Floyd and the video and all of that is the submission.
Yeah.
The position he was in when he was killed. You know, I'm sure you've heard your mother, your grandmother say people treat you worse than a dog, or they treat you like trash, or mm-hmm. you know, what they mean. And to have him in that position and be so brazen about it.
I mean, this like,
position
you,
in the body language was
putting you in your place.
Yeah, like, you know, I got you, you know. It broke my heart. It broke my heart. I have a son as well. I have a daughter.
Mm-hmm.
But there's a fear that just no matter how old they get, he's a grown man.
Yeah.
There's a fear that just rests right under you all the time.
All the time.
That you never know. Mm-hmm. And you just say your silent prayers every day.
Yeah.
That they're going to be okay.
Yeah. So I took a leap of faith and I said, I got to go. And after being with my therapist for over a year, you know, she basically made it very clear that what you have been experiencing is real and it is abuse. It is workplace abuse. And as soon as she used the word abuse, I literally was like,
it unlocked something.
It literally something came up inside of me and said, that's exactly what this is. So I didn't know when I was going to leave. As you know, many people who have been in domestic violence situations, when they decide to leave, sometimes it's in the moment. And that's what happened to me. It just was in the moment. I knew that I was clearly being abused emotionally, psychologically, even physically. I had a manager who poked me a couple of times to so-called get my attention. And I knew that I couldn't react the way that I wanted to, like, get your hand off me, you know? But I knew that that's what it was. And I had to stay grounded, stay professional, not to come out of character. But I knew that that was wrong. And I said, it's time to go. And I know beyond a shadow of a doubt, my cancer was caused because of the stress of the workplace. So the reason why I filed the lawsuit, obviously, I wanted to make a statement. I wanted people to understand and to hear the truth of what happened to me. I didn't want to walk away and for people to think, oh, well, yeah, I heard. No. You're going to hear the truth.
Right.
And so that's why I didn't sign a settlement agreement. Because had I done so, I would not be able to talk to you about
it.
Had I done so, people wouldn't have heard the truth. Had I done so, I would have signed an NDA and would never be able to talk about it again. And my whole point was hoping to finally get to court where I could parade all of those people through court for people to hear the truth against facts and evidence. And when I realized that that would never happen, that they wanted to literally pay me for my silence, I had to make a decision. Is there enough money in the world that would make me walk away and say, okay, I got my money, it's all good, I'm living footloose and fancy free, without using my experience to speak truth to power and to help other people? And as a journalist, we're not in this for money. We are in this to hold people accountable, to hold people, institutions accountable. And for me, that would have been, it just didn't sit well with my soul. It didn't. I mean, I was walking that afternoon when I had to make the decision about if I was going to accept it or not. And I was walking, I literally prayed and said, Lord, what would you have me do? And there was something that just kept coming into my spirit saying, this happened for a reason, because I knew that you would be the one to walk away, that you would be the one to stand up, that you would be the one to speak truth to power to help other people. And there was just something inside of me that said, if I sign this, they're winning, which means no one gets to hear the truth.
Right.
And the truth will set you free. And when I walked away, I literally walked into this new phase of my life, which is a phase of freedom, where I can say what I want to, speak truth to power, and help other people. And I know that I made the right decision, because there's not a day that goes by that I don't have an email, a text, a DM, a private message on people from on LinkedIn, Black women and men who are asking me for help. And they're working for major corporations and institutions where they are afraid to speak up. They're going through the same thing. But because of my story, many people are now going, you know what? I'm walking away and I'm going to tell the truth. There's a part of me that became more courageous because of the cancer. Mm. And if anyone has ever had a health issue in their life, there's something that happens that when you survive something like that, you're not afraid of anything or anyone.
Yes.
You're just not. I said, what can they do? There's nothing right. they can do to me. Yeah,
right. Because you have overcome the worst thing that could possibly happen.
All I have
you have managed to just mm-hmm. fight that battle and win. So mm-hmm. there's nothing that anyone else could ever do nothing. To you. No.
So I tell people all the time to choose courage over comfort, because it's comfortable for us all to be in the same place and to not move and to not make waves. And to, you know, we see something, but we don't say anything. Like, that's comfortable. And I get it, because we want our money, you know, we're working, we have to make a living. I understand it. But there comes a point in time where people have to stand up and speak truth to power so that it can change. Things don't change if no one is willing to stand in the corner that's of right. courage, even if it means they're by themselves. And I have been by myself and I'm okay with that. I've lost friendships. I've lost people who were close to me, former coworkers, all of that because of this. Oh yes, because of this. And guess what? Yeah. I'm okay. I'm sleeping well at night. And guess what? As we continue to work on legislation, hopefully we hope to pass on the federal level, but as we're going from state to state, proposing new legislation so that everyone can be protected in the workplace, I say to those people who didn't stand up for me, who did not stand with me with courage, who walked away and said, I don't want to be involved, I say to you, I forgive you, but I'll never, ever forget. And if this legislation, not if, but when it passes, it's going to help you. So you're welcome. It's going to help you and your family and your kids. And guess what? That's what my role, that's what my job
that's
is.
That's what you were
so you're welcome.
Let's go back, because you jumped over the hole. So you're doing the legislation.
Yes.
But let's talk about what got you there. Let's talk about My Silence Is Not For Sale. Because you were telling me you were writing this book and you were, but you launched this campaign. Tell us a little bit about that. So you've taken this experience.
Yeah.
We know that we're going to the legislation, but there's a lot of things that you're doing in between.
Yes. Yeah. You know, sometimes, gosh, I wake up every morning and I just say, Lord, like, What am I going to do today? Like, that's the freedom that I have.
Right.
And so, yeah, writing a book with a therapist, the two of us are working on a book called, you know, Sister, Time to Get Off the Hamster Wheel. You know, I don't know about you, and I'm sure we've all felt, we're just going, spinning. And as Black women, we're exhausted.
Oh, yes.
We're physically and emotionally exhausted. But yet the world, we're supposed to, the world of the weight of the world is on our backs. And I was tired of being that kind of strong woman, if you will, because I was not taking care of myself. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, this new phase of my life, it's all about, you know, self-preservation and wellness and making sure that I'm physically and emotionally healthy. But yeah, you know, right now I'm working with, you know, an organization where we are going across the country to create legislation to make workplace bullying a crime. I mean, for there to be legislation that holds people accountable and companies accountable. Because
I absolutely love it.
Thank you. Your HR departments, I'll tell people all the time, HR is not your friend. You go to HR thinking that, oh, they've got my back. Here's my story.
No.
They put it in the file. No, honey. They're there to protect the company.
That's right.
They're not there to help you. And we're trying to change that.
So you have a training I saw that's coming up. You have a training coming up for it. So anyone can join that training about how to introduce this legislation in their state?
Well, so it's through workplace bullying. It's through the End Workplace Bullying. It's an organization. It's a national organization. And so they have been successful in trying to create legislation in Massachusetts. I believe that's one of the first states. So on January 20th, anyone who has ever felt racism, discrimination, microaggressions, all of that, you have felt, you know, in the workplace, regardless of race, it's for everyone, because it's not just for Black folks. I mean, we get it second.
Right.
It's doubly more difficult for us. But people are dying from workplace bullying. People are committing suicide. They are losing their jobs. They can't find employment, steady employment after they leave a job or are fired. And so we're working to make sure that this really is something that is legislative, like companies and HR departments, people are held accountable for their actions. Companies are complicit. It is a billion-dollar industry in terms of the losses from the level of the number of people who continue to leave. I mean, think about your workplace. How many people have come in and they leave? They keep going. Mm-hmm. People are in and out. And if you talk to those folks, 9 times out of 10, they will share some story of workplace bullying. But there's no state nor federal legislation that really protects us. So yeah, we have, I was discriminated against. But did you know that we're still being held to like these 1960 archaic federal legislation, which is if they didn't call you the N-word or leave a noose on your desk, well, it wasn't discrimination. They were just unkind people.
They're just mean.
They're just mean people.
You're too sensitive.
You're so sensitive. I mean, right. Can you believe HR told me that one of my bullies, We coached him in kindness. Oh yeah, that was their remedy, coaching in kindness. So I am all about not just talking about the experience, but how do we turn our experiences to help other people? How do we solve this problem? And it's through legislation. So yeah, so I'm working with this organization and other people from around the country. Everyone and anyone is invited. It's on my website. On YouTube.
I'll make sure we include that information for people to get to it and register and sign up for that. And I have 2 or 3 people in the top of my head of all different races.
Yes.
That are in the midst of this horrible, horrible treatment. Cool. Like I have a friend that calls me up and tells me some of the things that are going on to her, what they're doing.
Oh, yeah.
Ageism is a big thing.
That's a big thing too. Absolutely.
Huge thing. Once you turn 50, even younger, 45, 50, these people start to treat you as
they do.
You are second class when you're at work.
Yes.
And this is the experience that one of my friends is having right now. So I will make sure that she knows that she needs to get on the Zoom and learn about how to deal with these people.
And it also happens too, Joanna, like if you're on disability, say, like for me, I had cancer, you know, it changes. They don't tell you that, but all of a sudden they are looking at you and watching you and they're trying to figure out how they can get rid of you. That's real. I can't tell you how many times people have said that to me going, as soon as I got sick or I had chemo or I was, you know, on disability, then all of a sudden I finally came back. They were like, well, you're dismissed. They retaliated against me. And the company will say, well, that wasn't retaliation. We decided to, you know, reduce your job responsibility. Or we decided to reduce the number of employees. They come up with a cockamamie excuse, but we know what it really, really is.
You know what else I'm seeing? They completely violate your privacy rules and laws.
Yes.
And they share your private information with your manager. When you go to HR and you take off for disability or whatever, that's only supposed to be something that is shared with your human resources department. Your whole department and everybody you work with is not supposed to know your business. They go around telling your business,
yep.
And then you have people treat you differently when you do show up to work or whatever you've got going on because mm-hmm. they know your business. It's really a crazy thing, and I'm so glad that you are doing something about this.
You're so
I'm really, really, really glad that you're doing something about it. So everybody that's listening, My Silence Is Not For Sale on YouTube,
mm-hmm.
on Instagram. Where else are you?
We're going to be on LinkedIn. Adrienne Moorhead. Yes, you can find me there.
We will provide you with the details as to where you can
sign up
for this mm-hmm. legislation and be a part of this. I want to change the subject for a quick second.
Yeah, sure.
But it's not really a change of subject, actually. It's pretty much the same thing.
Okay.
As someone who's worked in front and behind the camera mm-hmm. as a producer and as a newscaster. I'm sure you've seen Taraji's interview.
Oof.
And we've worked together on a project. Mm-hmm.
She brought me
what
to my
are your
knees
thoughts because on the yeah. inequity that exists across the board in yeah. the industry.
You know, it's a mess. Yeah. It's in every industry. It really is. I mean, how many Black women have you heard say, I was promoted, but I didn't get the financial reward that comes with it? I mean, that was my story, which is another reason why I walked away when mm-hmm. I realized that you guys don't really mean me any good. You don't. You know, you say you do, but your actions are, you say this, but you're doing this, like you're showing me something else.
Right.
I was so-called promoted to the 6 p.m. newscast, and I had my agent call the general manager at the time and said, you know, we need to renegotiate Andrew's contract. Why wouldn't we renegotiate my contract? I'm doing more, I have more responsibilities now.
Right.
The 5, 6, and 11 o'clock p.m. shows, the marquee shows. Why wouldn't I expect to get paid more? Do you know that they never gave a press release? They never made a public statement. The public didn't even know that I had been promoted to the 6 p.m. People on the street were like, so are you even doing the 6? Like, what's going on? Now they promoted everybody else. When they promoted other people, people knew about it. There was a big, you know, even an internal email. There was no internal email about my so-called promotion. And
sounds like you were just adding more tasks.
They were adding more tasks. Mm-hmm. So during the deposition process, during the federal lawsuit, come to find out that, yeah, we weren't going to pay you any more money because it was duties as assigned. It was duties. So you do what we tell you to do and you can't say anything about it or you could be upset about it, but we're not going to, you know, give you any more money. And so when Taraji talked about that a couple of weeks ago, I literally sat there and I'm like, that's my story. That's a lot of people's story. Like we're not immune to it. Every industry, we do all of the work, we get the promotion, but we never get what comes along with it. We don't get the public notoriety or praise or commendation. We don't get the financial reward, but we are expected to just be okay with doing more work and you be satisfied with what we've already mm-hmm. done. You be
yeah,
okay with what
we've
already
done. We gave you that title.
And don't complain about it.
Right, yeah, just do what we tell you.
Do what we tell you. And so I call it modern day sharecropping.
I love that. When you said that, that's exactly what
it is. Modern day sharecropping.
That's exactly what it is.
Working from sun up to sundown, and it doesn't matter how much crop, how great I am, how much I give to the community, how many more hours I work, doesn't matter how many events that I do that takes me away from my family on the weekends. None of that matters. This is what we're going to pay you because that's what we want to pay you. And you just better be happy that you got a job. That was the attitude. And I just said, enough is enough. I said, Lord, I trust you. I don't know where it's going to come from, but I'd rather, literally, I even said it, said I'd rather be a greeter at a big.
Me too. Me too. I get it.
And I'm not minimizing that because
No, because we need those people that work in these positions. These are all important roles.
They're important roles.
But I
just said I'm not going to work in a place where my value and my worth are being diminished just because you can. Not because it wasn't right.
Right.
But for them to not even know, for them to consciously make that choice, I was like, oh no, I'm not the one. I'm out.
Goodbye. See you. What were you to say? See you? Don't want to be you? Yeah, it's freeing. I have something else. Now that we've had a chance to talk a little shop, I want you to tell people listening what is your beauty and your healthcare regimen, lady? Because you are just, look at you.
Girl.
You look fantastic.
Thank you. Like you are, girl. I'm trying to be like you, Joanna. You know what it is, and I'm going to be real with everyone. I don't really do much. I hate to say it. What this is called joy. This is called freedom. This, what I have, what I put on my face every day, it's a smile. It's walking the beach every day. It's meditation. It's getting vitamin D. It's living in a city and in a place that brings me joy and peace and freedom. And once I walked away, Joanna, everyone listening, once I walked away, I saw the difference in my physicality. Because think about this, your body is diseased because it's diseased. Think about that. The cancers, the diabetes, the high cholesterol, the anxiety, the depression, the suicidal thoughts, all of that, it's because of our brains. When you are being emotionally traumatized, any trauma of any sort, physical or emotional, your body is crying, saying, help me. And that was the reason why I walked away, because my body, the cancer, they caused my cancer. Yeah, you did. And I said, I don't want to get sick again. I want to continue to live for my son and my family. And I said, I'll do whatever it takes. So what I have is what I call vitamin C, S-E-A. I live in a city where I'm close to the beach, and I walk the beach pretty much every day when it's not raining, or I just go and sit in the car and just look, and I talk to my ancestors and I pray. And I meditate, and that's what it is. I'm not on a diet. I'm still eating everything I want. I probably have too much sugar. I love sweets, but that's what it is. It's called joy. That's what it is.
You have no idea how much I needed to hear that.
Oh, it's true. You're so welcome. And I tell people all the time. I mean, we literally moved from Indiana to Florida. Now, of course, I don't like the governor, obviously. You know, the whole DEI initiatives that have been like, you know. But I keep saying that's a moment in time. That's going to change. But at the end of the day, life is so short. And I just said, I've got to live in a place that soothes my soul. And so we were coming down here for vacations all the time. And it just hit me. Every time we were leaving, I was crying. I was like, I was horrible. Like, we were on the plane and Archie's like, what's wrong with you? And I was like, I don't want to go back. And it just hit me. Now is the time for me to live in a place that soothes my soul. Because my soul was broken. Mm-hmm. So moving here literally saved my soul as well as my physical health. And so that's what it is. I don't use any special toners. I use Olive Olay. That's all I have. I wash my face with regular
soap. Shout out to Olive Olay.
I could be a 54-year, 55-year-old influencer if you guys want me. But that's all it is. It's just joy. We moved. We got away from the environment that just didn't satisfy me, that was not healthy for me anymore.
Well, I'm on that journey. I am on that journey. Yes.
Girl, I saw you when you were in Morocco. You looked amazing. I'm like, look at Joanna.
I'm telling you, I am on that journey. And I thank you for affirming that for me today.
Yeah.
Because it's time to make some immediate changes.
When I did that, even my son says, Mom, thank you for thank you for moving. And well, I'll tell you what he did say to me one time. We were in the car. This is earlier last year, about a year ago. He's now a sophomore in high school. We had kids very late in life. In fact, we weren't even supposed to have children. So he was literally a surprise baby. Yeah, we didn't even know. Yes. We were just satisfied with just being, you know, 33 and all around 40 years old. It was like, you're pregnant. So I was like, okay, God, what you doing? We thank you. But we were coming home from school and I just told Ian, I said, I just want to thank you because you're doing so well. And I said, we're just so proud of you. And he says, you know what, Mom? my decision to go to the school was 30% me and really 70% for you. And I was like, what do you mean? He says, well, I knew how happy you were whenever we would go to Florida for vacations. And, you know, you love being at the beach all the time. And the school is in that area. He just said, I knew that if we came here, that you would be happier.
Oh.
And I just sat there and I started crying.
Oh, that is so beautiful. Look at me having to wipe a little tear.
Because you
that's beautiful.
Here I was thinking that I was protecting him, working in Indy, having this job, telling my husband and my family what was going on, and even friends, you know, they knew what was happening. But I want women, especially Black women, to know our kids know our pain. We may think we're hiding it from them. They feel it. They sense it. They know it. And so while I was being traumatized, my son was also being traumatized, and I didn't even know that he was that aware. He was aware, you know, tangentially, but he didn't know a lot of details. But he knew it and sensed it and felt it. And so now I'm able to be present. I tell my husband, I'm like, I'm so upset because there are times when I look at pictures of Ian from when he was like 8 and 9 and 10 years old, when I was in the heyday of what I was going through, and I don't remember. Like, I don't remember. I'm like, I don't remember because I was so focused on the trauma.
Right.
I was so focused, which is fine. I mean, I was focused on trying to figure out, you know, how do I move? How do I navigate this landscape? But I've come to realize that, you know, especially when we have family, you know, and children, that they sense what we feel and we're really doing a disservice to them. And at the end of the day, I was willing to walk away from a great paycheck, a great everything that I thought was great, because it wasn't worth it to me. And so I regret being on that hustle and on the grind, but I'm thankful that I had the wherewithal to walk away when I did, because now I'm truly living my better than best life. Like, it's better than best. People are like, I'm living my best life. I'm like, oh no, I'm on a whole elevated level. I'm literally living my better than best life. And so the joy is what people see. It's the freedom. It's the peace. It's being able to, you know, like I said, cook for my family every day, which I never was able to do.
I'm on the opposite end. I don't want to cook nothing.
I know, right?
I'm like Aretha Franklin. I don't know if you've seen that clip of her when they asked her what her biggest decisions were, what her biggest challenges are. She said figuring out what to make for dinner.
Girl, that's every day. What y'all want to eat today?
I don't want but listen.
I said, if I can't ever have a whole bunch of money, I just want a chef.
I can't deal with that.
That's a chore. Like,
we'd be hungry and still don't have the deals.
Right.
Eat peanut butter sandwich.
Right. You're like, didn't we just eat that like 2 days ago? Like, I know, I can't think of anything new. But you know, I say all that to say that, you know, it's really about just having freedom.
Yes.
Being at peace and having joy and every day having, you know, it's a journey. And this is literally the best time of my life. Like,
I
wish I walked away even sooner, but God had to get my attention, and the cancer is what got my attention. I had a lot of time to think about, how am I living? Do I want to go back to this environment? And even when I went back a year and a half later after, you know, going through the chemo and then going through the radiation, the surgery, and then another year of immunotherapy treatments. During that last year is when the trauma continued to increase and my physical health, I kept saying, I'm not going to be in remission anymore if I continue to be in this environment. And it just was unhealthy. It literally was unhealthy. And so that's why, you know, it's so important for us to work on this legislation, because it is unhealthy. It affects your mind. It affects your body. And I never want to see anyone go through what I went through. I don't want another Black woman to get cancer or any other major disease to finally wake up and say, I need to change where I work.
Right.
This isn't good for me anymore. Take the step of faith now. Just walk away. God's going to restore you and replenish everything that you thought you lost, and will replace it and replenish it even bigger and better than what you thought you had. And so that's where the joy is. And so I just encourage everyone to choose yourself. Choose yourself. Choose yourself and walk away. Walk away in faith. And trust that God is going to restore you to a bigger and better place.
And that is a perfect way to end this conversation. Oh. I hate to end it because we're having so much fun. So you're going to have to come back and talk with us after we get that legislation passed everywhere.
Yes.
You're going to have to come back and sit with us and tell us how that went.
I get to work to be with you today and to share my story. And, you know, it's a story of resiliency and perseverance and you know, choosing courage over comfort. And so that's my mantra, if you will, choosing courage over comfort. It may not feel good in the moment, but trust your instincts, trust your gut, and trust that God's got you in the palm of his hands, and he will take care of you.
Until next time, aunties.
Aunties.
Bye.